Let's say on this first Monday of October, I am a law clerk to one of the Supreme Court justices, and I defy the shutdown, head into work anyway. I'm interested in this Justice Alito 2011 opinion, Brown v. Entertainment Merchants, on video game violence. Alito actually went along with the majority to apply the First Amendment to violent video games, but he made a very different argument from the rest of the court. It's complicated. Yeah, plenty of footnotes and internet links to support him. Here's one. Federal Trade Commission, .gov. That can't be working. But it is. Nice. Here's one, slashgear.com. Justice Alito on Slashgear. Does he have an Xbox or a PS3 in his office? Working. Huh. All about 3D capability coming down the pike. Then he says, check out these realistic kill scenes from the Spike TV Video Game Awards. Highly realistic graphics. This is what Justice Alito says the majority missed and why he might consider restrictions in the future. Here's the crucial piece of information and the link. Error. Broken. Nowhere. This is a huge problem, it turns out. According to a Harvard University study, 49% of the internet links cited in recent Supreme Court decisions lead absolutely nowhere, or some even show signs of having been hacked. Jonathan Zittrain, co-founder of Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society and author of the study, says the Supreme Court's ability to maintain its information citations of online sources has not kept pace with its hunger to use the internet in writing its opinions.
Well, as you might guess, the reliance has been growing from the moment that the Supreme Court first linked to a website in 1995 or so. And I think it's because both in legal scholarship and in legal opinions, oftentimes they're relying on sources, either as examples of something or as actual sources of argument, that cross lots of boundaries of disciplines or that go out to the public web. So we see now quite typically link after link in papers where the link is the source. It's not just a place you can find that New York Times article. It is a website or a blog entry that without it, you wouldn't have the source.
And this dysfunction of the hyperlinks on the Supreme Court site is really in some ways about a clash of metaphors of legal information, the dusty old law library that sort of sits relatively inanimate, and the online database, which requires constant management and updating. The collision of those two has produced this sense of complexity that looks like it's outrun the Supreme Court.
Yes, and it's interesting that libraries were developed to deal with the problem of scarcity and integrity of resources. It was hard to get a particular book, so we'll get one and keep it well indexed and be able to lend it to anybody who needs it and then save it for the next person too. That was sort of how the physical library worked before. It would seem at first glance that the development of the open web really supplants that, because everything is just a click away and you don't need to borrow your copy. You can just make a copy when you need it. The only problem is that that works until it doesn't. And because the web is wonderfully distributed, it means that where I click on a link to visit something, who knows what that server does at 10 o'clock at night or where it's been or how long it'll be around. And our study shows that over time, links, even to government sites and things that you might think would be more permanent, they stop working. And all you have is just click here to see what we mean. And then you click and you don't see anything useful.
Now, how do you think the dysfunction of hyperlinks on the Supreme Court website affects the preparation of briefs, the development and maintenance of legal scholarship?
Well, at the moment, the use of those links and then the decay that they experience, I think no one owns that problem. If you're the court, you just publish the link, it works, and it's just up to you to say, well, the last time we tried it, it worked. And if you're writing a brief, as long as it works for the moment that the judges contemplate it, you also might be happy. So I think there's a real role for universities and libraries to play to take a longer view and make it so that the products of our courts that become part of the law of the land and of legal scholarship and perhaps later scholarship more generally are preserved for the ages at least as well as they were in the era in which libraries kept custody of physical documents.
I mean, in a sense, this problem is crucial because even though a judge can create a citation and a link in an opinion in 2013 and it'll work for a little while, the idea that it vanishes or doesn't work, you know, a month from now or even 3 years from now, because we so depend on precedent to develop laws and opinions, it would be as though, you know, somebody references the Federalist Papers and you go to the library, oh, yeah, we threw those out. Sorry. I mean, it creates a huge vacuum in the law.
Yes, that's right. The idea that if you then click and you can't even see the example, it really not only undermines the authority of the opinion because you can't actually follow the link and see, but it makes it harder to take whatever the reasoning of the opinion is and apply it.
All right. So your study found 49%. You're sticking with that number, 49%?
49.9 of the opinions from 1995 to 2012. If you just lop off the most recent year, and you imagine there's where the links would be fresher and less likely to rot, that number starts to go higher and higher. Just by taking off the last 2 years, the average will jump from 50% rounded up to as close as 70%.
Wow. All right. So to deal with this, the circuit in San Francisco has tried to develop a database where the links always connect with some PDF document as opposed to a link simply to a server or some other website. Is that a solution as far as you can tell?
Well, it's a great start. And we've been working on a more comprehensive solution that involves now about 30 libraries coming together around the world that will make it so that if you are writing or editing a piece of scholarship or a legal opinion, you can take a link that you're about to pop into the opinion and that is likely to rot within a couple years and hand it to one of those libraries, which will archive it in several different flexible formats. And then that library, along with the other libraries, will preserve it indefinitely and hand back a link to the system, which is called perma.cc. So the PERMA system would contain that stuff forever, and you put the PERMA link into your opinion or piece of scholarship, and if people click on it, they will have a chance to see the original link. But if that doesn't work, they'll have an opportunity to see the archive that the author saw and found worthy of preservation.
Jonathan Zittrain, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jonathan Zittrain is a professor of law and computer science at Harvard, co-founder of Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society, and is co-author of this current study.